Hi there, global citizens. Welcome back to the podcast that inspires a borderless mindset around manifesting a new world. I am your host, Florence Adu, coming to you with part two of my conversation with Sasheen Artis. In case you missed it, as always, go back to part one. Sasheen gives us a great story about how she became an accidental producer. And she's starting the conversation here talking about a mini production masterclass. We'll pick up the conversation with her talking about funding versus financing. But before then, let me give you a little bit more background, which I do hope you will go back and listen to part one to hear the full scope. But she's a two-time Emmy winning producer and founder and CEO of Plenty of Pie, which is a curriculum-based talent incubator and media production accelerator. For over 25 years, she has produced film, television, and live events, including, I'll just name a few, an impromptu Prince concert, two New York Times bestseller tours, President Barack Obama. You kind of get the point, guys. She's doing pretty well here. Her most recent project, Birthing Justice, is featured on PBS, so you can catch that on PBS. So let's get right back to our conversation with Sasheen Artis. Funding versus financing. So I'm seeing a lot of different, you know, especially here in Africa, there's the idea of getting something financed is... Who then is actually going to then making it a property, basically. So it's making it something that people are actually a product that people are going to buy and what kind of platforms. So what is the rationale for a producer to say, okay, we're going to finance this because you're putting together a different package, a different business model, I would think to some degree. So tell us more about that.
So the difference between funding and financing. Financing, you have to deliver, well, your goal, God willing, is to deliver a return on your return on that investment. And so when you're financing something and you're putting together that package, you have to make it interesting to an investor where that investor can actually see that they can actually make their money back. And the difference in funding is that they want to see the impact that you're going to make. And that funding is well invested in that impact that you're making. With financing, what I, you know, the model I always tell folks is never, ever, ever have someone fully, one person fully finance your project. You never do that. They own your project. That is not a good thing. And unfortunately, if you have 100%, like 100% equity financed, you will actually never make any money off of that because you have to not only make that 100% back, but you also have to make the 20 ROI percent. And how are you going to make that? So I always, I encourage folks to consider no more of than a 35% equity pool. That's everything. So not 35 per person, 35 total, because you want to get your other monies, whether that's soft, you know, tax credits, soft monies from tax credits, in-kind product placements, brand integrations, anything where you don't have to pay it back. And then you want your debt to be very low too, you know, probably no more than 20-25%. Because again, the interest rate on that. Now, right now, America has higher interest rates than they had, you know, a couple of years ago where, you know, it was free money. People are just going crazy. So now people have to be mindful that, yeah, your interest rate is not going to be as high as that equity ROI, but it's still high enough that it can put you at a deficit. And again, with producers, you know, normally we don't get paid until there's a profit.
Right.
And once that profit hits, then, you know, your equity is in first position. Well, your debt is in first position, then your equity, and then, you know, everybody else, your talent and whatnot. So you want to make sure that you don't have one pool so fully invested where you will never make your money back. So...
Good advice. Don't do it
because at least with 35%, chances are even in a, you know, even in a movie that bombs with all the ancillary opportunities, whether that's pay-per-view, whether that's, you know, home video to whatever degree, education, airlines, cruises, you know, all of those pieces, you could probably put together an opportunity to get back that 35%.
Sure.
That's not going to be that hard. But to say a full 100?
Yeah.
That's insane.
Right.
That's insane.
You're getting a masterclass here, folks. So before we start talking about, because you're talking about cruises and airlines and all those things, I want to ask you about Glocal Speak. And so this is where I ask you to share a word, a phrase, or a saying that is a meaningful part of your local experience and why or how you come to value it as Glocal Speak.
Wow. I think for anyone in the entertainment industry, particularly in production, the phrase that you hear that you never really want to hear is, we'll fix it in post. That's right. Never let someone do that. Fix it now while your cameras, while you have everyone. You can't fix it in post. Yeah. It's going to cost you way more.
Yeah.
So that's the phrase that you hear. No, don't fix it in post. Fix it now.
I love it. Good. Again, masterclass, folks, masterclass. Okay, so let's talk about Plenty of High. So you're this independent producer, you're doing your thing. And so you've decided to kind of put out your shingle as more than just a producer. So tell us about the journey to becoming a broader entrepreneur in television and production and teaching and learning.
Yes. So in 2013, when I started working on Tavis's late night show, I worked for like maybe 2 or 3 months and qualified with as many hours I was putting in, qualified to join the PGA, the Producers Guild. And when I qualified to join the PGA and, you know, applied and all that, and I got in, I started working on their diversity committee and just understanding, you know, what the producer's role is in terms of creating diverse content. And so I got involved with this workshop, which was really cool. It was the diversity workshop. They had had it for a while, and I had been a mentor, got on their selection committee. And then the national executive director at the time asked me to chair it. And so when I took on that responsibility and got to see like the back of house and all the intricacy, I was like, oh, there is no infrastructure here. There's nothing. They're just kind of waiting it. And I'm like, oh God. So when I took that responsibility on, I started formalizing what this workshop was. And so when I did that, I ran that program for 4 years. We had some tremendous successes where people, you know, they were nominated for Image Awards. They were nominated and won documentary Emmys. They got, you know, I had folks who culminated out of the project. They got their projects option. They got money from foundations. And we have a couple of folks that became executives at, you know, Disney and Masterclass and doing all this great work. And so I saw how much impact was created when I had an opportunity to be intentional with how to train producers and how to build that ecosystem. And during 2020 was my final year in the position. And obviously, again, it was COVID, and we pivoted to an online situation. And that was even more interesting because we got to get these huge names. I mean, I had like the vice chair of Legendary, Mary Perrin, and Prentice Penny from Issa Rae's company. And, you know, just all these amazing folks because, hey, they don't have to drive to Beverly Hills. They can do it from their home. And I saw how it was easy to do something online. We still had amazing successes. And when we were finally able to come back in person, it was an opportunity to say, okay, producing and the role of the producer has been minimized in some respect and obfuscated in others because people understand, or I should say the right people understand the power of the producer. But when that power isn't given to creatives of color and to historically excluded communities, you end up with this gatekeeping space. So I decided, so the PGA, the National Executive Director, he left the organization. They got rid of the program, decided to, you know, go in a completely different direction with diversity and all the things. And so I saw this as an opportunity because looking at the landscape, there are myriad writers programs, directors programs, editing, animation, you know, below the line. There's a whole host of opportunities out there for creative and production, but very few for producing, for the business of the industry. And so I want, and you know, there's like maybe four or five out there. I'm like, that's it. And so I'm like, okay, there's obviously there's a place in the market for it. And there are people that want to understand it because they want to be able to be successful with their own productions. So, you know, I did my, you know, did my little market research. I had to, you know, take some classes on business management and planning and strategy and all those things. So I'm like, hey, I'm a producer. So I had to, you know, take some courses. And then in 2022, I said, hey, let's start it. Let's launch it. And so I started, put together my website and started talking to folks. And the, you know, the first person I talked to, which is crazy. I don't know if you remember Darren. And Alloway.
I remember the name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, he's one of our chocolate cardinals. He's, you know, a Brit. He's, you know, over there in London, and he worked at Goldman Sachs. And so I reached out to him. I'm like, what do I need to do, Darren? And so he kind of just, you know, schooled me on, oh, okay, you need this, 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 and this. And he connected me to some folks. And so I just started building and understanding what producers need, understanding they do need an ecosystem. They need, particularly when once they have the tools and once they have that mentorship to kind of help guide them, they need access. They need someone to be able to open that door for them because there's so few opportunities, particularly for historically excluded communities, you know, creatives of color, you know, LGBTQ, Middle East, North, you know, all everything, veteran. There's so few opportunities. It's like, okay, I need to create this ecosystem, make sure I have the partnerships around me. You know, folks who have gone through my workshop for the PGA, they understand what I'm trying to do. So let's recruit them as mentors. Mm-hmm. So that way, mm-hmm. you know, I can hit the ground running and I'm not hamstrung by having to teach people stuff. It's like, no, we know how to do this. Let's get it done. So this will be my inaugural cohort will be this summer. I opened my applications a couple of days ago.
Yay.
And
we'll put that in the show notes.
Yes, we're ready to rock and roll. I think, you know, it runs from June to September. It'll be 12 weeks, twice weekly. Some of it is online. Some of it is live. It can be in person or they can just Zoom in. But it is based in Los Angeles, so it's Pacific time. Our hope is that, you know, we can create this community and open doors for folks so that they can get into positions of leadership. Because I believe that the only way the industry is going to have more affinity for diverse projects is if we have the diverse executives there and the diverse producers there willing to take them on.
Wonderful. That's so exciting. And so building up to this point, how have you kind of started to place yourself and get the name out? Because you have been doing, prior to this cohort, you have been doing other types of work. So tell us a little bit more about those kinds of activities that you're doing on an everyday basis.
So leading up to this, I started with doing a webinar series just to kind of get people accustomed to, you know, my brand, get people understanding of what I'm teaching. So I did a webinar series. I have like one free webinar and three paid webinars. And, you know, focusing on like TV series development and documentary filmmaking and, you know, how to break into the industry and fundraising for media projects. What, you know, how can you, you know, put together that package, whether you're doing the funding route or the financing route? So I did that first. And I also started, you know, just reaching out and talking to people. You know, I think, you know, a lot of times when we have an idea, it's sort of like, oh, okay, now what do we do with it? You share it. Tell people, this is what I'm doing.
Yeah.
This is why I'm doing it. You know, and the thing is, I'm taught pitching. So I taught, when I went to Jordan, I had the opportunity, I taught pitching to the Jordanian creatives that were there. I taught pitching for the PGA's diversity workshop. So I know how to pitch. So it's about, you know, being able to tell that story and make sure people understand, you know, the why and how they can get involved.
Mm-hmm.
So I started doing that leading up to this moment and became a member of Color Congress, which is a documentary filmmaking ecosystem that gave me opportunities to, you know, take those courses on finance management and strategy and budgeting and all that. And that, you know, that's a, I think it's like a 100 member organization, and they're all across the globe of the Americas. So Caribbean and, you know,
North America,
the,
South America.
The 50 states.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Wow. So that is so exciting. And we wish you so much. So much success, because it's definitely needed. And I can just see this being the go-to resource for producers, because it's your experience speaks for itself, and what you're offering just is invaluable from your from the how you've thought about it, how you've prepared yourself. So we're looking forward to that.
Thank you. Thank you. I joined the Los Angeles Economic Development Corporation's Digital Media Entertainment Council and started talking to the California State University systems, the community college systems, all of those guys. Because the thing is, a lot of folks think, oh, if I'm going to get into the industry, I have to go to film school. And once they go to film school, they don't know what to do next. And it's like, okay, you guys need to have a bridge. You have to help, you know, folks understand, you know, what that degree means to us as producers. And if it means, you know, if it doesn't mean what you think it means, how to get them, you know, their next position.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I've been, you know, trying to help people understand the realities of this industry, because folks, they have that whole, you know, bright lights, big city idea of, oh, it's Hollywood. And, you know, the streets are paved with gold and we see stars on every corner. And it's like, no.
Yeah.
It's not that at all. It's a lot of work, but it's fun work, but it's still hard work.
Yes.
And you have to be willing to do that hard work, and you have to be tenacious about it, and you have to not give up. And yes, you're going to hear 100,000 no's. I mean, when I first started, I started knocking on the doors of folks that I knew and said, hey, this is what I'm doing. And, you know, then whatever. But it's like, that's okay. Y'all will be back. Mm-hmm. Y'all will be coming to me. That's okay. I'm just going to keep going, because I know it's necessary. I know that the producing role is such an important space, because, you know, people think, oh, the director, oh, the writer. It's all part of the team.
Exactly.
And if you don't have the captain guiding that ship, that producer, you know, the director will go and spend as much money as he or she possibly can. and they're okay with that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the studio won't be okay with that. Your financiers won't be okay with that. Exactly. So you need a producer to help guide and make something that's great.
Right.
So I hope folks understand that producing, you know, it's a tough space, but it is a collaborative space. It is a fun space if you like that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And it's also, for me, it's about, at the end of the day, when everything is wrapped, you're finished with post, and it goes, you know, whether goes on the screen or you're watching it on streaming or what have you, you can look and say, boom, it's done. I did that. Mm-hmm. We did this. Mm-hmm. You know, it's an actual physical thing that didn't exist, you know, a year ago, 2 years ago.
Right.
And that to me is amazing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. So thinking of physical versus not physical things, let's talk about AI. So in the production space, you know, we hear about it in terms of, you know, the creatives, so to speak, but where are you seeing and hearing dialogues about AI for producers, or and just generally your take in how it's reshaping the industry?
You know, I think people are still trying to figure out what role it's going to play. I don't fear it. I feel that it's a tool. I don't feel that it's going to end our industry as we know it. I mean, it's sort of like, you know, did the camcorder end our industry as we know it? I mean, it's like, no one was just running out and saying, oh, I'm going to, you know, take that guy's home videos and I'm going to make them. No, you know, so think of it that way.
Yeah.
I mean, it's about, can a professional use it to make their job easier? Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Will someone's job be obliterated because we have this tool? Well, I don't think so, because who's going to do it? You know, yes, you have this tool, but who is going to make those prompts? Who is going to do those tweaks? Who's going to do, I mean, who is the person that's doing that? So if that person is now gone, if their job is eliminated, there has to be another job created to do the work. Because again, this is not, you know, it's not a singular effort. It's not, you know, it's not an individual sport. It is something that is done by a team. And when, if you're relying on a computer to create an environment for you, what are they basing it on? They're basing it on the environments they've already had entered into their system. Maybe they tweak it. Maybe they don't. Maybe it's the same thing that you saw in, you know, a Julian Fellows movie or, some period piece. There's nothing new there. So I think we have to be mindful that AI can be used as a tool, but I don't see it being something that's going to obliterate our industry.
Sure.
Because humans, we're making this for, we're making the stuff we make, whether it's film, television, documentary, we're making it for other humans. Mm-hmm. And the moment we take our humanness out of it, our humanity out of it, who are we making it for?
Exactly.
The audience wants to be able to engage in something that has emotion, that has connectivity, that they can relate to. And will an AI tool be able to do that? I haven't seen it yet.
Right.
So
Right.
You know,
yeah.
Maybe, but I haven't seen it yet.
And I think you make a great point is that the creative space is humans creating, mm-hmm. right? And so just mm-hmm. as you said, like mm-hmm. the AI can only do what it knows. And it's not generating anything new. It's just taking. So, I mean, it may seem like a creative, but the humanity of us really does require us to be a part of it and for us to appreciate it. Because I know what I see. I'm like, I can pick out the AI all the time. And it's like, maybe for an ad, I might be okay with it. But for something that I'm investing half an hour, 2 hours, probably not. So,
right.
Yeah.
I mean, and then, you know, there are ways that, you know, I look at, there are lots of technologies that we use, whether it's computer, you know, generated imaging and, you know, various animation, virtual productions, virtual reality. I'm a huge gamer. I love that. But I also feel that it's important just for, you know, two people to sit and talk and have an engaging conversation. Right. And I think there's a place there. I'm sure there will be a place for it, but will it be prevalent in everything? I don't think so. And will it totally obliterate our industry? No, because again, we experience new technologies all the time. If you go back to like what I was saying with back in video, you had the VHS and you had Betamax. Betamax was the better technology.
Yeah.
It was the better thing. But the humans, the audience, chose VHS.
Right.
So the industry had to figure out what the heck to do with Betamax. And so, you know, we use it behind the scenes. But the masses, they were using VHS and they were cool with it.
Yeah.
So I think we have to just keep in mind that these are all tools, it's all technology, and technology can be adapted and adopted by audience and people, creatives, but that doesn't mean it's going to eliminate an entire industry.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, absolutely. And so let's talk about a mindset hack. So what is your favorite or an innovative mindset hack? This is one that you practice, one that you know of, or one that you can imagine.
Wow. I think for me, you know, I'm a believer. I'm someone who prays regularly and listens for, you know, direction, listens for the word of God. So for me, it's about, you know, being centered, being quiet, and getting your mind right and saying, okay, Lord, am I doing what you want me to do? Do I need to just stop? What do I need to do? And so I think for me, it's about being still. And when you're still, and you know, you don't have the music going or the TV and all that, if you're still and you're quiet, you can hear.
Okay, that's very simple. And it's something everyone can master. Still, if you tried. So, I mean, some people can't be still, but it's very meaningful. And I agree with you there that Yeah, good mindset hack. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about the Sasheen that is not running a business and being a producer. What do you like to do in What do you like to do in your leisurely time? Are you a reader? Are you a watcher? Are you a listener? And what are some of your favorite reads, watches, or listens?
I think when Sasheen's not being a producer and an entrepreneur, she's probably just asleep. My fun, the fun things, like I said, I love watching like old mysteries and crime dramas. So I'll watch Poirot, the David Suchet version or the Peter Ustinov version. I'll watch Maigret, the Bruno Cremer version, which is amazing. I'm like totally into that. And I'll watch other Nordic mysteries just to kind of get a sense of what's out there. Mm-hmm. And because I love, the thing about procedurals the world over is that how, God willing, how they're going to end. You know that they're going to catch the bad guy and, the happily ever after. And so finding stories and finding TV shows like that, it's so much fun to me. So I find myself, I love to cook. So I'll cook, I'll make dinner, I'll make a lasagna, I'll make whatever, or I'll do something fun and I'll make a chicken fricassee or something fun. And then I'll sit down and I'll, watch a couple of episodes of Maigret or Blood on the Vine or any of the fun mystery shows, crime dramas out there.
Nice.
So,
nice.
And then usually like old. So it's not like brand new stuff. It's like, stuff that came out maybe in, the 2000s and the 90s or what have you. But it was just, stuff that you don't have to think too hard, but it may be in a foreign language. So you're reading and you're picking up the language.
Yeah. Okay. That sounds fun. So those will be in the show notes, folks. If you're looking for new things to explore, we'll put those in the show notes. So Sasheen, this has been so wonderful. It's so nice to catch up. And so it's so interesting when I talk to fellow Stanford alums, it's because I don't know what it is. We just think differently.
It's funny. I think we particularly with, the club, the OOJ crowd, the folks that, basically created family in this, foreign land of Stanford, we understood our place in that space and we built from there. Mm-hmm. And I think you'll find, when I'm reading the magazine or I'm, connecting with folks on Facebook, that we're all working towards a goal. We're all like mission driven, goal driven, doing stuff. It's always like, wow, I know these people, it's like, it's cool.
Yeah, exactly.
I think we're just where we understood how to kind of navigate that world and then just kind of took off and blossomed from there.
Yeah. And I mean, I always say I'm so grateful for that experience. And so,
I loved it. I totally loved it.
Yeah. So before we sign off, do you have any last thoughts you'd like to share with our audience?
I think for me, understanding that the world is that global world has place, it has importance, that America doesn't necessarily need to be the model of everything. Mm-hmm. And to be able to embrace whatever your, whatever that local tradition, that local experience is, and it can be the model for something. Mm-hmm. So don't, I love, I love the US. I've been here for, ever. But I realize that there is so much out there. When you travel and you see the world and you see that everyone's trying to do the same thing. They want to take care of their family. They want a roof over their heads. They want food on their table. Everyone's trying to do the same thing. So embrace that tradition, embrace that culture, embrace the experiences you're having, and don't compare yourself to the States and say, oh, I have to get that. No. Do what you can do and make your space better and become the model. Mm-hmm. And I think that for me is what I want to leave.
Wonderful. Wonderful. That's great, great insight and great advice. Thank you so much.
thank you so much for having me.
Yes, indeed.
Yes, and yes, go to plentyofpie.net.
Yes, exactly. You know, so tell us where we can find you.
Yeah, so go to plentyofpie.net and you can go and, you know, take a free webinar. You can apply for the talent incubator. The talent incubator, we're based in Los Angeles, but we will have a lot of our courses on online. So if, you know, folks want to, you know, tune in to our Pacific Time courses, they're welcome to. But we just want to make sure that folks have an opportunity to, you know, get the information, get the mentorship, and get the access.
Yes. And great, and create wonderful content.
Absolutely.
Yes, indeed. Absolutely. Indeed. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Florence.
All right, Global Citizens. This has been another episode of the podcast. You can catch us Tuesdays with new episodes at globalcitizenspod.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And guess what? Google Podcasts is leaving. So all this time so some people get podcasts from YouTube and I've been real slow to put this on YouTube, but now it's going to be on YouTube because Google Podcasts is now on YouTube. Whoop, whoop. That's just a laugh at myself. But anyway, yes. So wherever you get your podcasts and like, share, subscribe, leave us a review. And until next time, bye for now.